Welcome to Managed Care Cast, a podcast from the American Journal of Managed Care. My name is Brooke McCormick, assistant editor of the American Journal of Managed Care. On this episode of Managed Care Cast, we're talking with Dr. Hannah Neeprash, PhD student John Mulcahy, and Dr. Ezra Goldberstein, the authors of a study published in the March 2024 issue. Their study, The Extent and Growth of Prior Authorization in Medicare Advantage, discusses how the service, area, and carrier-level patterns they identified suggest variation in how Medicare Advantage plans use prior authorization. Welcome. Can you each introduce yourselves and tell us about the work that you do?
My name is Hannah Neeprash. I'm an assistant professor at the University of Minnesota's School of Public Health and a health economist by training. And I would say that most of my research focuses on financial incentives in healthcare and how they affect the decisions that we make about healthcare.
Hi, I'm John Mulcahy. I'm a PhD student at the University of Minnesota studying health services research, policy, and administration. Most of my work has focused on long-term services and supports for older folks, and that makes Medicare plans very relevant. So, on to you, Ezra.
I'm Ezra Goldberstein. I'm an associate professor. So we're all in the Division of Health Policy and Management at the University of Minnesota School of Public Health. I am a health economist, health policy researcher, and I do a bunch of things related to some very similar and overlapping with Hannah around how different types of healthcare providers respond to different types of incentives, along with lots of other work on financing and organization of different types of healthcare services.
What was the objective of your study, and why did you decide to investigate this?
We just wanted to get a better understanding of how prior authorization was being used, it was and is being used in health insurance in the United States. And this is, I think that this is such an important and fascinating area. For one, it's a space where there's so much information that's out there that is ultimately anecdotal in some way. Like you can find lots of examples of news media coverage of why everybody hates prior authorization. But there's really extraordinarily little systematic data out there about how prior authorization is actually used in our healthcare system. So we have people care about it a lot. People are annoyed about it a lot. There's not much data. And also at the same time, there is increasing policy attention around prior authorization. And one of the areas where there's a lot of policy attention right now, particularly in the federal government level, is in the Medicare Advantage market. Another thing that sort of pieced together here is that Medicare Advantage is one of the few places where you can find any data whatsoever about the use of prior authorization by health plans. And if you look at overall Medicare as a program, Medicare Advantage is like half of the program enrollment now. So this is a really big deal. And there's at least some information that we were able to pull together about the use of prior authorization by these private managed care plans that are serving Medicare beneficiaries. We can talk later on about how the data are very imperfect and could be improved in many ways, but it's at least something. Kaiser Family Foundation or KFF has published a bunch of nice reports over the years that summarize some bits and pieces of information about the use of prior authorization by Medicare Advantage plans. What we saw was we thought that we could make a contribution here by sort of building on some of that information by looking at how the use of prior authorization was changing over time in Medicare Advantage, and also trying to drill down a little bit more deeply than what has been done before to understand, well, what are the different plan or area level characteristics that seem to be associated with the degree to which prior authorization is being used by Medicare Advantage plans.
Can you discuss the main findings? Did any surprise you?
So the top line finding of our study is that 3 out of 4 Medicare Advantage enrollees are in a plan that exposes them to prior authorization requirements for some services. And that number, the 3 out of 4, is pretty stable. It's been pretty stable over the past decade. That's what we found. But when you look under the hood, there's a lot that is changing about that number. So if you look by service category, you see tremendous variation. So on the low end, specialty services, physician specialty services tend to have the lowest rates of prior authorization requirements. But then when you look on the high end, you see that more than 70% of Medicare Advantage enrollees, if they need durable medical equipment or Part B injectable drugs, they're exposed to a prior authorization requirement for those services. So there's a lot of variation there. We also see tremendous geographic variation, which isn't surprising in healthcare, of course. Everything about healthcare varies geographically, and prior authorization is no exception to that. But when we look at associations between demographic and market characteristics, we actually find that they fade over time. So in 2009, we found a really strong negative association between rurality and prior authorization requirements. And that was almost gone by the time we got to 2019. So that's, I'm not sure I'd say it's surprising, but it's a bit of a puzzle for sure. The other thing that I did find a little surprising is that when you look across different payers, so different health insurers, you see that everybody kind of does prior authorization differently. And to me, it suggests that we just haven't figured out the right way to do it yet. And everybody is kind of throwing some spaghetti at the wall, different spaghetti at the wall, and there's work to be done.
Yeah, I think Hannah hit on just about everything that I would have pulled out about our results. I thought that, yeah, the geographic variation that we see and how it evolved over time and the exposure of Medicare Advantage beneficiaries to prior authorization was really striking. And it really does seem, I think that one of the most striking things for me, what Hannah was saying, is this, that like, if you're trying to understand the story of prior authorization use in Medicare Advantage, it really is a story of what different insurance companies are doing. And it also therefore seems that where you live seems to matter for exposure to prior authorization, in part, at least, because where you live matters for which Medicare Advantage plans you have access to. And just insurers just, you know, said they're doing all sorts of different things.
How do you interpret the variation in prior authorization requirements across different service categories within Medicare Advantage plans? What implications might this have for patient access and healthcare outcomes?
Though we see variation in, you know, the level at which we see prior authorization from service to service, there's been a clear trend over the last 10 years where across all services, it's increasing, as evidenced in Figure 1. So these service categories are fairly broad. And when a plan reports, you know, having prior authorization in that service category, we know they have it for at least one service, and know very, or frankly, nothing else about which services they're applying prior authorization to within that category. So there's still a lot of plan-to-plan variation we're not seeing within categories, and that can kind of make it difficult to draw conclusions about how plans are handling these categories differently. But in general, there's a clear trend in applying prior authorization to more services rather than decreasing prior authorization.
I might just add that this is the tip of the iceberg, probably, and that if we had more detailed data about how prior authorization is used in Medicare Advantage, I bet we would see even more variation from insurer to insurer.
Based on the study's findings, do you believe progress has been made toward achieving racial and ethnic equity regarding prior authorization in Medicare Advantage plans? Why or why not?
Yeah, so in 2009, we did see across the four major services we looked at a trend of prior authorization increasing as counties have a higher percentage of BIPOC people living there. By 2019, that trend was either attenuated or reversed across all four services. But it should be said, relative to some of the geographic measures we looked at, this was a far weaker correlation than things like morality, and how that change was achieved by 2019 probably has more to do with prior authorization increasing across the board rather than less prior authorization in certain counties. But one thing we can say is that the association was fairly small in magnitude at both time points and across all services. But that being said, this goes back to the plan-to-plan variation and how they're applying prior authorization within service categories. There could be a lot of variability we're not picking up on in this data set.
Considering your findings, what role should policymakers play in regulating prior authorization in Medicare Advantage plans?
So first, I think that policymakers are right to be focusing on this area, given that it's such a widespread practice across Medicare Advantage plans. The 3 and 4 number, I think, suggests that this is a big and relevant issue for Medicare enrollees. As a former Hill staffer, you know, I'm a big believer in evidence-based policy. And this is an area where I think policy needs a lot more evidence. For me, I'm especially interested in, you know, some of the causal questions. You know, how does prior authorization affect spending and access to care? I think when we know the answers to those questions, we'll be able to make much smarter policy. But I'm really excited about some of the efforts that are aimed at collecting more data on how prior authorization actually works. How long does it take? Who does it affect? Where do we see it most? What services? Stuff like that. I think some of the policy efforts that are happening right now are really valuable. And in general, I think I tend to support policies that aim for the kind of the twin goal of right-sizing healthcare spending while also safeguarding access to care, especially for patient populations that have been underserved in the past. So hopefully we can do both of those as regards to prior authorization in the coming years.
Yeah, and I would just add on to that, you know, one area of policy attention is that I think, you know, it has the potential to be, I think, a net positive. Of course, you know, devil is always in details and implementation, but is around, you know, things like how can we do a better job with our existing electronic health information technologies to facilitate it and rely more on like electronic prior authorization or e-prior auth, which, you know, the federal government has been pushing towards. And to the extent that that just can be eliminating headache and burden that would be requiring staff time and patient time and provider time otherwise, that, you know, that could be a very good thing. So I think that's a promising area as well.
Based on your findings, what areas would you recommend for further research on prior authorization in Medicare Advantage plans?
Yeah, my first priority for research, I think, would be really understanding how prior authorization requirements affect spending, utilization, and access, kind of the big three. And, you know, like I mentioned, that requires causal research rather than, you know, research that's focused on associations. But there are also some really important descriptives that we need, just some like basic numbers about prior authorization. So, you know, which services are most likely to have prior authorization requirements, which doctors are exposed to the most prior authorization, you know, which patients are exposed to the most prior authorization requirements, and how does that affect them down the line?
Yeah,
I think that's my big question. There are lots of other ones too. Ezra, jump in.
Yeah, no, and if that's a sort of like the foundation here, like I think like building off of that also, I think there's such important questions about the extent to which prior authorization practices are well targeted or not. Because like you can imagine that as much as prior authorization might drive everybody up the wall, it might be valuable in certain circumstances where we think that certain services are being used more often than they ought to be used. Those things that might not be a high value service for all patients necessarily. Those are areas where prior authorization processes might have value at making certain low value services for certain patients not happen necessarily. You know, that could be good both for the patient and for healthcare spending, which is, you know, affects everybody, and in the Medicare program affects our entire federal government. So, but we don't, you know, we don't know that. We don't know the extent to which, you know, are certain services being targeted more than others because of that or because of other reasons? To what extent do insurers try to, you know, focus on certain types of providers where there might be more potential benefit to using prior authorization? Or are they being, or is prior auth just being used in a very blunt way? In some ways, there are a lot of analogies to understanding cost sharing in health insurance, which we know a ton about now from decades of very good research. But, you know, we know that it matters. We know that it can be really difficult for lots of people and can be a significant barrier to care. And we know that it's also, you know, we know it, and we know it can be a very blunt tool as well. And it's one of those areas where I think we have made a lot of strides in trying to understand it better and fine-tune the use of cost sharing in at least some circumstances to facilitate high-value care. And I think that we could try to adopt some of that thinking to prior authorization policy and regulation as well.
To learn more about prior authorization, visit ajmc.com or see the show notes. To get in touch with us, you can email info@ajmc.com or follow us on X at @ajmc_journal. And if you like the podcast, don't forget to subscribe and rate us.